Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening from Fort Lauderdale. This is Nate Klarfeld with Stonewall Live, the best in gay, lesbian, book, film, and media talk on Blog Talk Radio. Tonight, my guest is Dr. Jay Asher. Dr. Asher wrote a monthly column for the Gay and Lesbian Center in South Florida on gay and lesbian couples issues. He also ran a bi-monthly support group for the Center for Gay and Lesbian Couples, for which he won an award. He has self-published a memoir, Sunny Boy, and two novellas, Love in Progress, a lesbian love story, and Brighton Beach Murder, about male prostitution. Dr. Asher's doctoral dissertation dealt with gay and lesbian adolescent suicide. He is the co-founder of Hatch, the Houston Area Teen Coalition of Homosexuals, which HBO did a documentary on his work called Why Am I Gay? Good evening, Dr. Asher. How are you?
Good evening, Nate. I'm great. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. That was kind of a long intro, and you have a... I had it all in like one sentence. I'm like, you know. Let's start with the book Love in Progress, because that was fun.
Okay.
I read it.
Okay.
What made you write the book? Tell me why.
Well, I think the reason I'm writing, period, is gay, lesbian, transgender. We all grow up in a heterosexual movie, book, magazine world, basically. So what I'm trying to do is make the gay, lesbian, and transgender experience ordinary by writing ordinary love stories and murder mysteries. And my play First Date is about a transsexual, which has won a couple awards across the country. So it's just to make us feel comfortable in our own skin that we are worthy of being written about and performed. So that's my journey.
Great. I've been working in gay literature just for about 12 years through the Stonewall Library and Archives, and I'll speak about that in a minute. And I've kind of like divided gay literature into three gigantic phases. Phase one was like the first 100 years, where there were gay novels that always ended badly, that the gay character committed suicide.
Yes.
A lot of angst and guilt and repression and how horrible and the religious thing. And phase two, unfortunately, was the plague, was HIV/AIDS, and we had a huge explosion of books being written. Of course, they did not end well. They ended with a lot of hope.
Although Larry Kramer wrote plays about the plague, yes.
Oh yeah, but not only him, but there are many others. Andrew Holohan, Edmund White.
Yes.
There was and then we have people like you. We're in phase three, so I throw you in the pot with the brand new phase three writers. And as you mentioned, you are writing ordinary novels. In other words, what you want, and inserting gay life, just like gay life is inserted into normal the life of the world. So that's great. That's great. So. Let's stick with Love in Progress for a while.
Sure.
Lesbians. Well, there's actually three lesbians, but because there's an ex.
Yes.
Okay. And she has a big part in this. Anyway, so it's a lesbian love story. Is that a good way to put it, or is there a better?
Yes. Well, it's a lesbian journey. It's a lesbian love story, yes, but it's a complicated journey of self-discovery. I'm a couples counselor, and I deal with a lot of straight couples. And what I'm just trying to say is that lesbian couples and gay couples have the same problems. It's all ordinary. It's all difficult. And it's all the same challenge.
What kind of problems did this young lady? It was Jane is our heroine in the book. And she,
yes.
Does she run into?
Yes. Well, her problem, so-called, is that she has to be in charge.
Uh-huh.
So in spite of having a long marriage to a fellow doctor, uh-huh. She has to pay all the bills, and she has to do much more than she should,
uh-huh.
to the point where Maria, her first partner, is frustrated and feels she's lost her identity trying to please Jane. And Jane's frustrated that she's paid all this money and Maria doesn't love her back the way she needs to be loved back.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So they go ahead.
Go ahead. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead. So they what?
They break up. They have a daughter. They've had a daughter. And at work, Jane meets Letitia, a very sensuous Latina, who is very strong and will not be mowed over like Maria. So Jane has to apply years of therapy. Rather than just nodding at the therapist, she really has to apply now what mm-hmm. she truly has learned. And Letitia, also in therapy, well, I'm a therapist, so I write about therapy.
Right.
Go ahead, Nate.
Well, what's funny is you just mentioned not at the therapist. I think one of the ubiquitous themes of living as a gay man or woman anywhere, especially in a metropolitan area like South Florida, is we've all been in therapy.
Yes.
Or and we've all just sat there and nodded at the therapist and said, everyone I know has done that, including myself. I'm very guilty and an unusual situation. We've talked and met. My partner is a psychiatrist.
I remember.
Yeah, so yes. I nod all the time when he goes off on his rants. But so easy. I'm sorry. I'm not belittling your profession, but you've seen it across. Yeah. People look
and
they nod and then they go and do what the fuck they please. You know, they go to make the same mistakes week after week, month after month. And as I said, Jane is strong until she meets her match, Letitia. Okay. Two questions. Number one, you're a gay man.
Yes.
You're a therapist, so you're choosing. Why did you choose to write about lesbians in this novel?
I don't know. I've heard this from authors before, and I can honestly say it fits me.
Uh-huh.
They chose me.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I was the innocent. I was minding my business, watching television,
uh-huh.
and they came to me, and I walked into my office, and I started uh-huh. writing. And the characters, when I write well, I uh-huh. don't write. I'm just the conduit. The ideas and the voices are there, and I just type.
That's interesting. Many authors have said the same thing, that they're just
exactly.
It's just the arm just kind of moves in that direction. So they found you very interesting. Maybe you're really or a lesbian in another life.
Well, it's I'm convinced I was a lesbian of a former life.
You could have been, but which one were you? Letitia? I'm sorry. I know you wanted to be the Latino because we live in South Florida, and all white Jewish men are crazy. Latin boys. Anyway, I'm being very funny now.
Very Jewish men like a smooth Latino.
I have no idea what it is. Anyway, and I'm married to a tall blonde. Who knows? Anyway, let me digress just for a moment for our listeners. Jay's book, Love in Progress, is available on Amazon.com. It's Dr. Jay Asher, A-S-H-E-R, Love in Progress. It's on Amazon.com, available on your Kindle and in paperback. One more little plug here before we go on. Jay is going to be appearing in person at my favorite place, the Stonewall National Museum and Archives, America's largest gay and lesbian circulating library. It's at 1300 East Sunrise Boulevard in Fort Lauderdale in the ArtServe building right off 15th and Sunrise. The event is free and open to the public, so I want you to drop in a week from tonight at 7 p.m., Thursday, December 6th, and we'll see you there. Whew, I did that pretty well. Anyway, let's go on. You and I have a lot of strange things in common. I did not share all of them with you when we've met a couple of times. And one of them is while you were running the bi-monthly for couple, I was in the room down the hall, or actually I was outside and in that garage area, if you remember correctly. I was running an HIV support group at the exact same time. I remember seeing you walk in and I walked out. And I had incredible. I had no training, by the way. This was the olden days of the GLCC where they let you just do stuff without training or knowing what you're doing. And they had no idea. But what did you find was the common big problem? And what years were you doing this counseling?
I think I stopped doing it about 10 years ago, and I did it for 2 years on two Saturdays a month.
Okay. We were there.
It was the first.
Because I was there about 12 years ago for 2 years. So I know it was you. I remember seeing you there. What was the big problem 10 years ago?
Well, I think the lack of communication.
Uh-huh.
People making couples making assumptions that they know or understood because it made sense to them, it would make sense to their partner. I think opposites attract, and it was certainly true of many of the couples that came to work with me over the 2 years. And although it was the opposite that attracted them, it was the opposite that frustrated them. So rather than honoring what was attractive, they want to change the partner to be more like their perfect self.
Uh-huh. Right.
So I don't know if that answers your question or not, but that's...
Okay, so basically you could have just been on Oprah. I mean, you were just talking about... You just talked about straight couples. I mean,
thought I was on Oprah. Isn't this Oprah?
I'm a skinny white boy. So
with muscles.
That's right, a little bit. So underneath it all. But, you know, really, that's what, you know, I've watched Oprah for, you know, 25 years, and she talked about communication and acceptance and not trying to change the partner. So what you just mentioned has little or nothing to do with both partners being gay.
No. That's the point of my writing. That's the point of the group. Yes. I mean, I work and have worked for 22 years with straight couples and gay couples, and the problems are the same. Finances, sometimes children, in-laws, success very often can tear a couple apart.
Sure.
The problems are absolutely the same. Only the faces change to protect the guilty.
Excellent. That's excellent. Yeah. Well, I dealt with the self-esteem issues of shame and guilt. So, but they were the same issues that if I had been to had run any other group with addiction or chronic disease problems. So it really is, you know, there are some universal truths here, and we always think our community is so unique and so different, and our problems are so much, you know, stronger, and I think it's just a matter of perspective that they are exactly the same, that we are all alike. All right, so you lived in Houston for a while, is that correct?
I lived in Houston for 7 years, yes.
And how was gay man in Houston? How did that work out for you?
Well, the difference between gay men in Houston and gay men in Fort Lauderdale is that the gay men in Houston wear boots to dance.
That's it?
That's it.
They're not taller?
the difference between lesbians, and I may be wrong, but it's my observation, lesbians in Houston by far drive more pickup trucks than they do here in Fort Lauderdale.
We have a lot of lipsticks here. That's right. We have a lot of golf.
Gay men in boots and gay women in pickup trucks. That's what I would say is Houston.
That's good. That's very
Montrose
cute.
Montrose. Yeah. The work I did there with Hatch the Youth, that was a miracle. Gave me so much love. That was the highlight of my life.
Tell us a little bit about your work with youth.
Well, there were six youth that came to the First Unitarian Church in Houston asking for a safe haven to meet.
Uh-huh.
And Trish, today she's Kalodny, she was Morgan then. Trish had just graduated, and they started the group, and 6 weeks into it, I joined, and I have a marketing background, and Trish was an organizer. So between the two of us, I think within a couple of months, we had 100 gay and lesbian youth attending.
Wow.
And, well, it's all in my memoir.
Uh-huh.
And if the people listening come next Thursday, I will have it with Brighton Beach Murder
okay.
and Love and Progress for sale. So,
okay. And
the hat story is in my memoir.
It, which is called Sunny Boy. Is that correct? Sunny
yes.
Boy?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, that's interesting. I lived in Texas for a while, commuting back and forth. My partner and I did have a long-distance relationship. It was between the gay community of Dallas and Fort Lauderdale, and I found them almost interchangeable, but for two things. First of all, the men were better shaven. They were a little cleaner. You know, here we have...
In Dallas?
In Dallas, yeah. When I flew back mm-hmm. to Fort Lauderdale and I'd walk into a bar or Alibi or lunch at a place, the men looked like, oh, I didn't feel like shaving today, or, you know, the wrinkled shirt would never have gone out after dark in Dallas. So
Dallas is the home of Neiman Marcus. It's where it all began. Maybe that has an influence.
Yes, it didn't have the pickup trucks. You're absolutely right. And
yes.
My partner has a daughter who happens to be a Chanel lipstick lesbian, but her partner was a boot kicking girl. So it is true that Fort Lauderdale, though, I know from working in the community for 12 years, especially in fundraising and nonprofits, has a lot of very professional women, and they're huge into golf. They're the country club. We have the country club golf set here, which is a completely different group than the Birkenstock plaid wearing Bebo Brinker of the I think it's Ann Bannon who wrote about Bebo Brinker. But anyway, let's get back on the subject here. Fine. Okay. So, Brighton Beach Murder, your male prostitution thing. The first you're a lesbian, and now your other alter.
Yes. Well, I felt
I knew that.
And re.
I knew you always wanted to be a male hustler. Is that correct?
Right. Well, we read and watch so much about female prostitution. I lived with a Russian for 11 years, and Brighton Beach is the home of the Russian mafia. So
sure.
I felt I knew something. I felt I knew enough to write a story, and it was great fun to write a murder mystery.
That's cute. That's cute. It is. And, you know, male prostitution, I always have, you know, this I remember this is back reading this study 30, 40 years ago. I was married to an attorney, and she showed me an article, I believe it was in Psychology Today, and it was about job satisfaction. And high-end female prostitutes had higher job satisfaction than female attorneys. And the reason everyone knew what was expected of them, they knew they were going to get paid, and, you know, most people left happy, which, you know, very few professions have that.
Well, you make me think of Todd Song Trilogies, a play turned into a film.
Right.
Written and performed by Harvey Fierstein, when Matthew Broderick, as the prostitute, says
uh-huh.
to Harvey Fierstein, the transsexual, transvestite, I needed the money. I needed the love more than they needed the money.
I think that
he, as the prostitute, the male prostitute, needed the love from the men more than they needed the money he took from them.
Right. Oh no, that's great. I forgot about that line. Yeah, that's true. He needed the love more than they needed the money. Yeah,
that's
very true in prostitution. Of course, you know, I don't know. You know, today, you know, when you say male prostitute, you know, you think of this, you know, sleazy person on the street, but actually,
not at all.
It's very hot. Professional job, correct. Yes, yes. Yeah,
well,
yeah.
It's very competitive.
Uh-huh.
Where they strip in the bar is very competitive.
Right.
They want to climb the ladder of the best bar with the
right.
best clientele with the biggest bucks.
Right.
So They've been taught, most of them, 99%, let's say, have been taught from childhood that affection and sex go together.
Right.
Most of them have been sexually abused as children.
Right.
But lots of them are great guys who really want to please the client.
Did you do much research into
it? Very seriously. Yes.
How did you do research?
I interviewed one last week.
Okay. Really?
Okay. In bed.
Okay. But it's true. Well, I went to school in New York and 125 years ago, and there was a bar there called the Townhouse Bar. It's still there, I think.
58th Street and 3rd. Oh, 2nd.
Yeah. Right. 2nd, correct, because I lived in 38th and 3rd. So, the Townhouse Bar, and it was known for its you wore jacket and tie. It was kind of it had some cheesy furniture, and I'm trying to explain it to listeners. We're talking about the late 60s, early 70s, and young men would come in there. I would still be wearing my Columbia University tie, which is a great way to get picked up, by the way, is to have an Ivy League tie in a gay bar, but those days are over. And you would, because we had to wear ties to school. That's another world that people don't understand. And there would be these older men, of course, older is younger than I am right now. And there would be these, constant hookups. And sometimes it wasn't as overt as, their hustler, but the bottom line was they needed some cash. And so that's where you would go, would be the Townhouse Bar. So that's whenever I see male problems.
It's also affection. It's sure. Within the community of male hustlers or strippers, it's very competitive. They
right.
want to be able to say, I did 2 Johns or 3 Johns or 4 Johns.
Right.
It's complicated.
Right, right.
Just
and what
like the rest of them.
And what they got from the Johns and where they took them and where they took them to dinner.
Yes.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, and it's all the talk.
Right.
And you do it in the bathroom. I mean, you go to the bathroom, and I was not a hustler. I was a student, and I was there as a single man looking for sex, of course. But you would go there, and this is – I just tell the listeners, when you go back in history and gay world, I was one of the very fortunate ones to have come out and actually been sexually active pre-herpes and pre-AIDS, which means that there was never a real cloud hanging over my
yes,
head other
yes,
than Jewish.
Right.
But the Jewish guilt goes away really fast with a hard dick. So, that's my line.
Well, the Catholic guilt, it's all the same. The Muslim guilt.
Right. It's a little heavy.
The Baptist Church black guilt, it's very
right.
much... It kills the soul.
They did it to all of us. Okay. Listen, I do my plug again. We've been chit-chatting too long. Amazon.com, Jay Asher, Love in Progress, both Kindle and in paperback. We have next Thursday night, December the 6th, 7 p.m. at the Stonewall National Museum and Archives at 1300 East Sunrise Boulevard in the ArtServe building near 15th and Sunrise. Jay will be doing a book talk. There'll be little refreshments. The event is free and open to the public. So tell your friends, come on by. It's a beautiful place. We actually have an exhibit, which we're in the lobby of where Jay will be speaking in the little auditorium. And our exhibit this month is Our Stars. And what we've done is we've gone into our 40 tons of historical archives and brought out things like Barney, Frank's gavel, and who was just here and gave us a bunch of stuff. And you just have to come by and see it. We brought out some of our treasures, clothes from the transsexual menace. Very fascinating stuff. Well, anyway, let me go back to Jay right now. Jay, you mentioned that these books were self-published. Tell me how that came about.
Well, I self-published my memoir through Middle River Press, a great couple, and they had never self-published on Amazon before, so the three of us did it together. And I don't know what they did, but there is a division of Amazon, and they have a separate website, and you sign up and pay some fee, and the publisher sends them a printable copy, which they reproduce, and it's really part of the 21st century, as opposed to sending your book to 20, 30, 40, or 50 publishers and getting the reject letters. I was just interested in getting the stuff out there. I don't need the thing that HarperCollins said yes to one of my books. So it's just about getting it out. The same thing with the plays. I'm not looking to make money. I just want my stories to be read. I think it will make a healthier community, if I may say so.
Well, great. Thank you. Thank you for saying that. Let me just give the readers, listeners, a little bit more background on this, since I've been working in this field for a couple of 3 years, the self-publishing field with authors. Many established authors that have been working with places like HarperCollins and Knopf have left them and gone to this Amazon system. Authors that have 20 and 30 books out there, authors that have some big bestsellers. When you buy a hardback book, the author sometimes makes all of $2 on the book. That's his net of that hardback $25 book. He can put that same book on Amazon.com for $9.99. With a little bit of work, he could do it himself. He doesn't have to really go through a publisher, but you can upload a PDF copy. You can upload your JPEG cover. With a little bit of work and some computer savvy, you can be up in about 4 hours. You can have your website up through Amazon, self-publish your book on Amazon, promote it yourself, and you will make 75%. You'll make $7.50, roughly, three or four times what that hardback that you have to go on book tours and schlep and sell. So this is the 21st century of books, and many books you're going to see are going to be self-published. They'll be promoted by Facebook, Twitter, flash mobs, blogs, commercials on your Google ads. It's going to be incredible. I think it's going to be great. I think it's a democratization of the publishing world, which has a democratization of publishing, because it's been really, really difficult. Some incredible writers have been stifled by a mood or an energy, and they've been wrong. Publishers.
I decided I did not want to sit by the mailbox every day waiting for that one letter that will say you're wonderful.
Right.
And I just uploaded it and I moved on to the next story.
That's exactly right. You're working. And as I said, you're actually making more money on your fee through Amazon, even with a publisher.
Yes, yes. Love and Progress is a novella. And my guess is, I don't really know, that publishers may not be interested in a novella. They probably want a big, fat book. This Love and Progress is like 130 pages or something. So it's an easy read. It's a fast read, which is what I felt is the modern reading market.
Good. All right. We're in our closing minute and 4 seconds of the interview. I told you it would be the fastest 30 minutes of your life. What if you had a young man come up to you, which you might next week, and ask you this question: what do I do to write a book? I want to write a novel. What should I do? Give him the answer.
Ask in your seat 4 hours a day, 5 or 6 days a week.
Mm-hmm. It's like a job.
Yes. Sit at the computer and you try to write 4 to 5 pages a day. You don't look for perfection. You just got to get the story out, and then you can edit at your leisure. But just, you got to do it every day. You decide 4, 5, 6 days a week. If you're a morning person, you start at 7. If you're a night person, you start at 7. And you just put in your hours, and out comes the book.
Okay,
you find it.
We're at the end. Thank you so much. We'll see
My
you
pleasure.
Next.
Thank you.
Thank you, and good night. Thank you, all. Good night,
good
all.
Night.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.